Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech on Black Hollywood Live. Today, Mark Zuckerberg stands firm. Obama gives his final tour of the White House, and Trump keeps on tweeting. Let's go.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live's Geek Nerd Tech.
Broken glass everywhere. People pissing on the stage, you know they just don't care. I can't take the smell, can't take the noise. Got no money to move out, I guess I got no choice. Rats in the front room, roaches in the back. Junkies in the alley with the baseball bat.
That's a rough day. I tried to get away, but I couldn't get far. Cause a man with a touch of rats in the front room, roaches in the back. Junkies in the alley with a baseball bat.
That's the reality.
Still is. Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech on Black Hollywood Live. That was Melly Mel and the Furious Five with Grandmaster Flash.
Absolutely.
One of the seminal groups in hip-hop, one of the first, you know, rap groups ever.
Yeah. And one of the first socially conscious messages. It's the message.
The first socially conscious rap on record.
On record, yeah.
That's the one. That's when it sort of changed the game as to what people thought and knew they were able to rap about. It's the first time people weren't rapping about partying.
Right.
And it was
the first storytelling, really.
Yeah.
Being exemplified.
And it's also, I noted, because Rolling Stone paid attention and gave it 5 stars with a review and elevated the art form from just party songs to like, well, looks like we have something here. That Rolling Stone was not super progressive on hip hop early on, but they changed their ways. But welcome to Geek Nerd Tech. Shall we break down geek news and nerd culture from a black and brown tech perspective? Tech news and nerd culture from a black and brown geek perspective. I'm joined by Akili Shine. I'm Joe Braswell. How you doing, sir?
I'm good, man. I love that track. I remember listening to that all the time when I was a kid. My dad would just always play that particular one. Loud as hell, too.
Yeah. I mean, well, it was, you know, the music was fantastic, you know, and the kind of the funk-based music. But Melly's rhymes were incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Super advanced.
I mean, like, long. And then the song was like 6 minutes long, and he was still rapping.
Yeah, it was still compelling.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like, okay, I'm tired of hearing the same loop. Like, I was entrenched.
Yeah, it's the whole time. Also, you know, it kind of reminded me, I was going to say, I'm almost in the spirit, I'm almost in the vein of some of the Gil Scott-Heron spoken word joints, particularly, you know, my favorite, Whitey's on the Moon. But I really love, while we're talking about this, I loved Melly Mel's rap in Beat Street, his underrated rap in Beat Street, which is kind of like the message. Mm-hmm. He has whole first verse where he basically tells the whole plot of the entire movie, mm-hmm. and then the whole second verse where he does kind of like the message part two, which is really like he doubles down on his socially conscious message. I thought it was incredible.
I think the thing that's dope about the message is that you still got the funky beat. You got a banging ass beat that has some musicality to it, even though it's loopy. On top of that, you have the progressive, socially conscious message that's defining what's happening in the urban community, which has never been done before on record.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the video was pretty fucking awesome, too.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you know. I mean, that's my thing. It's like, back to a time when the most gangster thing you could do was wear some, like, leather boots.
Hey, that's that 70s swag.
I'm not mad at it at all. Rick James. And
exactly.
Like Cameo and all of them.
Dressing up like a woman.
The gangster thing you could do is wear.
Dressed like a woman.
Is wear some glitter and some boots.
Right.
That's all good, though. Anyway, welcome to our show. Lots to talk about. We're closing in on the, as we sit here today, we are literally 2 days away from the end of the Obama era, and it's you know, it's kind of hit me. It's been hit me slowly but surely, creeping up on me. But it's hit me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, how could it not hit you when you juxtapose it to what we're about to enter?
Yeah, that hasn't really hit me at all. I won't really until I see him swear in on Friday. Which, are you gonna watch?
Yeah, I am gonna watch because as a critic of you know, culture, I want to know what's going on. Absolutely. I want to be able to give an informed opinion, and I want to be able to see it myself versus read it from others.
Right,
so absolutely.
I'm gonna try to watch too. It's gonna be a tough watch. How far are you gonna watch? You gonna watch
Am I gonna watch the first dance and all that?
That's what I'm saying. You're gonna watch the remarks and the swearing. You're gonna go all into whoever Trace Atkins, whoever's playing.
I'll probably definitely watch the more formalized elements of the inauguration, but some of the more social stuff I'll just have on in the background.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll definitely be sitting to watch to see what this dude is gonna say, even though I kind of already know. But I also want to know, you know, who's in the crowd, who's in the audience.
Over, under on how many Confederate flags we see. Right. I'm so damn dead serious. I'm not joking.
Hey.
Like, you know that shot they have of the mall?
Right.
Like, how many Confederate flags do you think we'll see waving?
Hey, amen.
I say 10.
Hey, amen. Hey, who knows, bro?
I hope
there's a lot of protest energy out there, you know? Mm-hmm. And I know there's a lot of groups that are doing stuff the day before and also the day after, but yep. I wonder if there's going to be a lot of energy or anti-Trump stuff happening, you know, actually during the inauguration.
I think there's a lot of there's some disruption planned, peaceful disruption, I hope, and I wonder if that'll turn into, you know, I just hope there's no real violence. I mean, there's the people who are there to support Trump's, you know, presidency and really who make the trek to go see President Trump. Those folks, the people who show up at the Trump rallies.
Yeah, they might be.
Like they're like ready to wild out. So
hey.
If a bunch of niggas come up, or anybody, it doesn't have to be black folks, but anybody come up, you know, and I mean that could get interesting.
Hey, man.
Not violent.
We will soon see, brother. We'll soon see, man. But to your point, man, my take on the whole Obama exiting, like we talked about a few times in recent times. But, yeah, I mean, it's some sentimentalness of it, you know, having someone that looks like you in the White House that has, you know, kind of like your body language and, mm-hmm. you know, you have a lot of identifiers, you know, and not to have that anymore, I think, will be a void and it's kind of like a loss and almost like a death. So it's like a mourning in a way, you know. Yeah.
Well, you know, Oculus Rift and Facebook have done something I think is pretty cool. They have, and Obama and the White House have set up a virtual tour of the White House, something right. like, you know, a few people get to see what the inside of the White House and the Oval Office looks like.
Right.
And they have a situation where you can do a tour of the White House. I really want to do that. I think it's only through Oculus Rift. I can't do it through my joint, I don't think, yet, but hopefully maybe.
Actually, I think you can, man, because they're offering it even if you don't have a headset.
Oh, okay.
You can watch it on, you know, on your computer, but you know you're not going to have the immersive experience. But you could, I think you can watch it on multiple formats: your phone, computer, and your headset.
Hopefully, if I have it on my phone, I can do the headset.
Right. Right?
I would love to do that. But that's exciting to me. I would love to. It may be kind of nice to get a nice farewell to Obama, having given me a tour of right. his White House.
Exactly.
What he's got hanging on the walls.
Absolutely. I mean, I love the fact that, you know, Obama. I mean, obviously, the technology has caught up during his presidency,
sure.
but the fact that he's harnessing the technology and giving us these experiences to be able to see, you know, bird's eye, first person, what goes on, mm-hmm. you know, in correlation to him. I know he did that big thing with the national parks when he went to, I think, Yellowstone or Yosemite, and he did the same thing with the virtual reality. You could see exactly what he was looking at and just the beautiful landscape. And so to be able to then harness that technology again and show us what it looks like in the White House, I think is pretty fresh.
So, yeah, I agree. I forgot that he already made that move.
Yeah,
with the parks thing. So, looking forward to that. Moving on to our guy Trump.
funny man.
You know, on Sunday, there's an interview on Sunday by Congressman John Lewis with Chuck Todd and Meet the Press,
mm-hmm.
where he talked about Trump not being a legitimate president and had his feelings on the Russian hacking and other things. And Trump responded, as he does every time, with a Twitter rant.
Yeah.
Saying a lot of interesting things about American hero and civil rights legend John Lewis, particularly all talk, no action, which is just dreadfully insulting, to say the least. I have to expect him to be like that lightweight Martin Luther King. I mean, but the idea of doing that in Martin Luther King weekend, and it was technically Martin Luther King's birthday on the 15th, the idea that all went down on that day, the tone deafness of that is insane. But not only that, and then he went on to talk about his burnt-out failing city in his district, which is Atlanta, which is, you know, very upwardly mobile, progressive city, not full of on fire or whatever he said it was, you know, whatever. So now that's not in the story. I shouldn't give that airtime. But the story is a lot of Democrats, starting with John Lewis, are going to boycott the inauguration. What do you think about the boycott? What do you think about Trump's tweets?
I mean, hey, we obviously get a lot of our information from social media, Twitter, Facebook. And, you know, I like the fact that a lot of House members, you know, were vocal about their position as it related to the inauguration and saying, hey, we're not going. We're not going to support, you know, a president-elect who's been disrespectful and demeaning to multiple groups, and our values don't align with that. And the inauguration is a time where you celebrate and welcome the president because you want to have some type of commonality or alignment with, and we're saying we don't have that. And so I think it's some symbolic stance to take, and I think it's very powerful, and I think it definitely keeps the climate of critique upon him even as he enters the White House. And so I like the fact that they came to John's back essentially, and said, I don't like how you responded to him, and we're gonna do the same.
And it made me feel, I agree with everything you said. It makes me feel good that like Republicans are making this a partisan issue too. I mean, one Republican representative just tweeted, "Dude, stop!"
Right.
You know, and people are just going out of the way to say this isn't. Some people are like, I think that Mr. Lewis has chosen his words poorly. Some have said other things, but what do you think about the notion of the president on Twitter in general? I mean, like, someone on Meet the Press said this is just the new abnormal, we have to get used to it, this is the future. Others says that's ridiculous, American people shouldn't have to adjust to him, we shouldn't have to grow up because he's a child. Like, what do you think about, from a technology standpoint, information standpoint, our president on Twitter, from an international governing standpoint?
I mean, I remember 8 years ago when Obama was diehard BlackBerry. He didn't want to give up his BlackBerry, right. But he did because of national security, and they wanted to be able to have a phone or a system where they could, secure his communication. And he did forthrightly, even though he was like, "Yo, I'm team BlackBerry." He still gave it up.
Right.
And so I feel like, if his advisors and people that have obviously done this for almost generations are advising him to, hey, not use Twitter in the way that he's using it, I think he should listen. But hey, I think he's going to fall on his own sword. I think that the fact that he is such a child, and his responses are so childlike, that I think he's going to continue to cause so much turmoil and trouble for himself. And I think that's great.
The fact that he could be baited and trolled by anybody. There was a list on Meet the Press that was like a joke almost. It was a scroll of all, since he's been president-elect, all the people he's lashed out and responded to on Twitter. It was a long-ass scroll. And it was like, and John Lewis was at the bottom. It was like,
how do you have the time? That's what I asked.
As president-elect, we got a lot of shit to do.
Why do you have the time?
He's on Twitter, lightweight, failing, piece of garbage, like, knock it off,
Thank you.
I mean, we're talking about nations, statesmen, organizations, newspapers, CNN, individuals. It's really,
I mean, I get the fact that, President Obama has tweeted. He tweets, but like the fact that he uses that platform in a more controlled, deliberate, strategic fashion. Trump uses it just like he's just talking to the homie, in the back room. Right. Big difference.
Yeah, and almost everything he says is wrong and misinformed. Wrong. I mean, almost everything he says. All right. Moving on. So right now, I would say about, 2 miles from the spot we sit right now.
Man, I have to ask you this question.
Yes.
Sorry. My question to you is, how do you think Twitter is responding to Trump using their platform?
I mean, it's interesting. I think that they, Twitter sort of positioned themselves as someone who can't do anything because, it's tricky. It's back to our age-old question. Is Twitter closer to an NBC or a CNN, or is Twitter closer to an AT&T or a Sprint? If it's closer to an AT&T and a Sprint, then, hey, people talk on the phone, they say shit all the time, Or people say whatever they're going to do on the Wi-Fi. If they're closer to an AT&T or to an NBC or a CNN, then they do have responsibility to say, hey, on our airwaves, we don't allow XYZ, which they kind of do. You can't just go on Twitter and say what you want. But this is the president of the United States. It's an interesting debate.
But doesn't the attention bring more attention to them as a platform? Every time you say Trump and tweet and Twitter, that helps rise the stock of Twitter.
You can make the argument. People have already been making the argument that Twitter is kind of on its way out and probably will, it's close
be acquired.
To, yeah, be acquired or die in some way, shape, or form, and that. I'm sure Trump will tell you, I'm saving Twitter. It was failing before I started tweeting. But I don't know. I mean, are you suggesting that this is an advantage to Twitter and they want to keep it going?
I think anything that is hoarded out is an advantage to Twitter.
Hmm.
So
interesting.
I mean, I think that the fact that he is able to, he has millions of followers and he's able to get so much attention from, 40 characters, I think it, it serves as some benefit to Twitter as a platform.
Interesting. Well, we'll see how it plays out. It's
140 characters. Sorry.
Yeah, so it's the debate of the how they position themselves: media company or communications tool.
Right.
I guess it is. Anyway, right down the street from here, from this very spot, Valley College was hacked and some information was held ransom. The hackers asked for about $28,000 worth in Bitcoin. I don't know what you call that. What you call Bitcoin? I guess it's in Bitcoin. I guess it's just in
Bitcoins.
Bitcoins. Okay. And they paid. And I think they sort of felt like they had to. But I mean, this is interesting. This could have sort of cyber ransom, cyber terrorism. But then, you know, they figure $28,000 not that much. But is this a slippery slope? In that, like, oh, they paid $28,000. We should ask for $52,000. Are they going to hack them next week? Are they going to hop around from district to district? I mean, what, is this a bad precedent, or is this something they should have paid?
I mean, I think that, you know, they had to weigh the balance. Like, do we pay and, you know, maybe they don't give us the security key to get our information back, or do we not pay and we know for a fact we're not going to get it back? So it's such a nominal ransom, we might as well just pay and see what happens. And plus, I believe they have insurance, you know, as well for stuff like this. But, I mean, I agree, like, it is a slippery slope in terms from the hacker's position. It's like, hey, I'm going to exploit this as much as I can. From, I guess, an organizational perspective or a company perspective, it's like, hey, I mean, you're in the digital era that we are, you will always be at the threat of a hack. No matter how secure your systems are, the hackers are going to figure it out and try to trump that. And so I think it's always going to be an ebb and flow with that, you know. But the fact that, you know, a hacker can extort you now with Bitcoins, where it's untraceable, it doesn't have a centralized bank, I think that is, it gives the hacker clearly an upper hand, because yep. It's like, you can't really come down on me.
And it's also blueprints, tip of the iceberg. I mean, what happens when someone, you know, hacks, you know, I don't know, I'm just an example, like Wells Fargo, you know, and wants $1 billion. Otherwise, what's a half a million, went to $1 million or $500 million. Otherwise, I delete all these accounts or whatever. It's something ridiculous. I mean, who knows where we're headed right from here?
It's definitely possible.
Yeah, it's a scary times, interesting times. Like, I think that just sets a bit. It feels like a test balloon floated up to see what. I mean, every individual is different, but they know they got the. You know, like U.S. School system, they got them on lock.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, and they need every bit of that money. So back to Zuckerberg. Zuck is, there's some folks suing Oculus Rift, saying that the folks who started Oculus Rift fell out. I mean, a company called ZeniMax is claiming that the Oculus folks flat out stole their stuff to make Oculus Rift. Facebook acquired it, so now they've been going after Facebook, saying you have stolen stuff, and we need $2 billion from you. And Mark Zuckerberg said, "Hell no."
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Mark, you know, flew into Dallas to actually be there in person and suited up, you know,
right?
I think says a lot that, you know, I'm not standing by this. I'm going to really fight this. And he argues that, you know, what is the name of the company again?
Zeni Rift.
Well, yeah, that company's arguing that Mark, Facebook, Oculus took a bit of code from them, and Mark Zuckerberg is saying that if you look at the back end of how we developed our software, there's no piece of code that can tie us to this company. And so I think he's also angry at the fact that, you know, because Facebook is now so big and so ubiquitous, that, you know, a lot of people are trying to sue him just because he's big and they think they can extort him or get money off of him. And so it's like, man, it's like a chore now. When you get so big, it's like now you have to protect yourself from the people that are just trying to kind of leech off of you. And this is what he's arguing as that case. It's a leech case.
Right. So. I mean, I think it's, again, and I also think it sets a bad precedent. And 2Bs is not, I mean, it's Facebook, but 2Bs is 2Bs, you know?
2Bs is a considerable amount of moolah.
You know, he's not going to write that check and keep it moving. Nah. So, he could, but he's not going to. So keep staying with Facebook. Facebook has decided to do something which I think could be a good idea. In response to all this fake news and news controversy and what is Facebook and da-da-da, they're doing what I suggested they do on this very program. They're starting their own sort of journalism project. Now, they're not starting a news... are we on, Marissa? They're not starting a news channel or a news division.
Right.
They're starting what they're calling a journalism project. Mm. And what that's going to do is be able to somehow, I don't know exactly how, but they're going to be able to utilize, you know, Washington Post and Fox News and Germany's Bild and even Spain's El País to sort of aggregate and use their own people to sort of generate their own sort of journalistic news. And I guess the idea would be to have higher accountability for the stuff that comes through Facebook,
right,
as opposed to, you know, just anything that's posted up and that's and Facebook is responsible for, you know, disseminating and sharing anybody's news, which is clearly fake. And it's just an effort to stop people like Russia, yeah, from beginning out using their platform for misinformation. I think the last thing I'll say is, it's one thing if it was like, hey, fake news guys are out there trying to make some money, but now that it's been clear and noted that Russia has been utilizing Facebook as a platform to get disinformation into the American population, he can't ignore that.
Yeah, can't ignore that. And I think it's also an economic strategy for him, because
everything is, by the
way. Of course. But I mean, that's not talked about in the article, obviously. Yes, like good faith. I'm doing this out of, you know, right, it's a positive thing for my partners. Right. But I mean, there's been a lot of critique with a lot of publishers that because of Facebook's algorithm, that a lot of their stories get, you know, tucked under, and a lot of people don't have the same visibility ranking as other publishers do. And so what he's also saying is he's going to partner with some of these publishers that are on the lower totem of it, and that will give them the opportunity to be able to make more money, because more visibility, more ads, more money for everybody. So I think for him that's good, because, you know, you have accountability with the storytelling and, you know, just the journalistic ethical elements of it, and then you're also, you know, bringing, you know, quality content to Facebook as a platform to the audience, and because more people are viewing it, advertisers want to be a part of that, Facebook and the publisher makes money. Win-win for everybody.
It's win-win for everybody until, I think it's all fine, but it just still has the same problem that our current news system has now, which is it's advertiser-generated and based. So right, if you're still doing something where you're trying to get clicks for money, you're putting yourself in a bad position.
It's going to have a degree of...
But it's better than what I got now. Right now. So, right. Moving on. Facebook is also putting a startup incubator in Paris, building its first startup incubator in Paris. Again, you know, this is viewed as sort of this altruistic sort of, we want to go and find the greatest minds and one of the greatest cities of the world. And it's also just the oldest trick in the book to say, we'll spend some money, you guys develop stuff on our platform or through us, and guess what? We got you all. Ha! We're in Paris! You know, so it's like Uber offering free driving lessons in China or something, you know? It's like, but what do you think about this? Am I wrong about this take? Do you have a more pessimistic take?
I think all the big companies do this. Every company has a R&D department, you know, where they're, you know, siphoning the best talents of the world, getting the best engineers, the best programmers to be able to come up with the next best idea. And so the fact that, you know, you're in this incubator where you can come up with something that can generate potentially, theoretically, billions of dollars, and you might have some ownership stake in it. Like, I don't know if it's a full Facebook acquisition. They're just like employees. I think they might have some type of ownership stake if one of the incubator ideas, you know, gets selected. But the fact that they've created an environment in Europe, in Paris, where they're able to, I guess, have a centralized place where they focused on developing new dope shit, I think is pretty fresh. Same thing that Apple does. Same thing that Google does. No difference.
Yeah, so. I agree. Let's see. I agree wholeheartedly. And,
you know, you're just a Facebook hater, dog.
I just don't trust it. I don't trust Zuck. I don't trust it. I feel like I hate whenever he's like, good news, you know, America, I'm going to make your life better. I don't believe you. I believe there's an end game here that involves him, because he's a ruthless. I mean, you saw on social network. He ain't changed. Anyway. Moving on. We saw this at my birthday party situation, but the new Apple commercial, which I think is excellent, just sort of talks about the AirPods, and they do this great commercial as a way to illustrate how they won't fall out. This is brother dancing around, sort of on the walls and the ceiling, all these different places. I think it's an amazing commercial, an amazing campaign. I haven't peeped out the headphones yet. Apple does a great job of rolling out. I don't know if people are really worried about these or not buying them because they're expensive or they feel like they have the need to sort of prove that these work. They are a little scary because they're very tiny. I know I will lose them like crazy, but supposedly they work, and supposedly they work well. I don't know. What do you with the campaign? What do you think about the AirBuds?
Campaign is dope. Commercial is fresh. I wonder what agency did it. I'm sure it's the same. Why didn't Kennedy did it?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the campaign looks fresh. Like it's like a very cool cinematic. Just the way they've kind of like changed the perspective of dance, of movement, all on film is dope. And to argue that, you know, you could work out with these, or you could do some type of physical extracurricular activity and they won't fall out. I like the way they artfully did that. In terms of the product, I don't know, man. I think that Beats already has a wireless headphone suite. Like, I don't know why this is better than that. You know, having the AirPods that don't necessarily have more framing around your head versus Apple Beats that has, you know, the traditional headphone design but just don't have cord. Like, so are these louder? Do these pick up, you know, a better polyphony of music? Like what's the argument for these other than the fact that they look kind of futuristic?
Well, I think the argument for them is that Apple's really just like they did with the Air. They're trying to go away from the plugs and the Air was away going from the CDs and the this and that. They want to go to a wireless sort of, you know, world. And with the new 7s, obviously they're trying to do away with the headphones and the headphone jack and everything else. And pretty soon, I'm sure in the next iteration, you know, you won't have any kind of holes or connectors. It'll be all, I mean, with the exception of speakers, it'll be all, you know, solid, you know, seamless. So it can be waterproof, and your chargers will be something you can just put on the ground. But I think this is just a move to sort of say we're getting rid of wires and we're going to do a cool.
But we already did that when we acquired Beats.
But Apple hasn't done it. Oh,
yes, they acquired Beats.
Yes, that's your point. That's your point. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, but did they acquire the entire Beats? Like,
yes,
the headphones, everything.
Absolutely,
or just
the whole
piece?
Company. The whole company.
Wow, I didn't know that. Good for them. Well, maybe this was developed by Beats, and they're just taking it away. Who knows?
So I'll throw it back to you. So if you had, you know, a couple, I don't even know how much they cost. I haven't even educated myself on this. But yeah, say you had a couple $400, $500 laying around. You grabbing these? I don't think they're that much, but
no, they're not that much. But they are. They're not cheap. I think they're under $200, but still, they're not $39, which is already expensive,
right?
You know, so I mean, you know, they're over $100. I think they're around $150, if I remember correctly. I like the idea of them. I still want to buy them. So if they came with the iPhone 7 or the iPhone 8, cool.
Oh, they're definitely not coming with it.
I know. So I don't want to go out and buy. Nothing has compelled me. I think this is probably why the ad campaign, because nothing has really compelled me to go out and buy them. Another thing is yeah, the workout piece. I mean, you know, a lot of people really don't like the Apple in-ear. A lot of people don't like the Apple in-ear phone.
I hate them.
Yeah, see, people really like. So it's.
I have big ears.
I like them, actually, so I think these could be for me, but, you know, we'll see. Something that's interesting, before we get to this, I want to talk about our friends who are at DraftKings, who we are, you know, people think that, you know, because we're deep in the playoffs, we're at the Final Four in NFC and AFC Championship games, that it's too late for fantasy football. Most fantasy football leagues have ended. I came in third place in both of my leagues, as I thought I was losing. But most of those are ended. But you can still play with DraftKings, because DraftKings allows you to pick players all the way through the playoffs, pick teams, pick players, compete against each other, compete against other folks, and with a big chance to make a lot of money, over $100,000 in cash money this week. It's the same as we always say. All you gotta do is go to DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. Enter the promo code GEEK. That's DraftKings.com. Promo code GEEK. You can play and win today. Tonight. I mean, well, you can play. You can get the lineup today for the games over the weekend. So check it out. DraftKings.com. All right. So Apple, as predicted, is inching ever so closely to their own sort of like streaming joint. They are. We knew they required the Carpool Karaoke brand that they were going to. We predicted they would put on Apple Music. They already have. They announced the Will I Am show, Planet of the Apps,
They have a Dr. Dre.
A Dre show coming as well. They're like dipping their toe in the original content, but you know they have the wherewithal and the money and everything else to go full war. And people are predicting that this may be something we may see by the end of this year. The headline I'm reading is Apple just declared war on Netflix and Amazon. Do you view it as war?
I mean, maybe this is the early stages of what may become war, but I don't think they're positioned to really take a great market share away from Amazon and obviously Netflix, the biggest fish.
But why? Because they have sitting around, lying around, $237 billion in liquid cash to just throw at anything.
Awesome. Okay, so it all comes down to the content. It has to be compelling content. It doesn't matter, you know, if you have the money. I mean, there's networks that have billions of dollars that have terrible content. You know, it has to resonate with the audience and with the zeitgeist that we're in. So Apple is a great company to be able to do that. I mean, they make Apple TVs. Obviously, they have Apple Music as the platform. But they're talking about building content to be integrated into Apple Music to directly go after Spotify, which has almost double the subscribers than Apple Music. So I don't know what the platform will be to go after Amazon or Netflix, because they have no other platform besides Apple. Okay, yeah. So but that's what I'm saying. It's too early for us to say it's warfare. I mean, they have to build a platform, which they think about. They've already have a platform for music that they're not winning. So, I mean, you can't say because they have $230 billion that they're automatically going to win. How come they're not beating Spotify?
That's a good point. I mean, I think that their strategy with Apple Music, which I still ride for, is we're gonna win this with curated content and stars and access and everything else. I think what's happened is, the title's not winning anything. I think the title with its large stars, exclusivity of the large stars, is splitting those two up, when Spotify was already ahead. Spotify was already ahead of the game. So
just as Amazon and Netflix are.
When you launch those two and you're splitting, you're fighting for scraps over there, it's going to be hard to catch Spotify and Pandora, who had a long head start. That being said, the analog for that for me is HBO. HBO had a head start, a long head start. Netflix.
In the streaming game? No.
No, I'm talking about just in terms of, like, I'm using the analog of, like, Netflix came along and was able to catch up and also pass.
They created a different industry, though. They created a different business. HBO wasn't streaming content before Netflix.
Oh, that's a good point.
Netflix was DVD to your mailbox.
You got me.
Like, so, I mean, they created a whole different business model.
Excellent point. Well, the other thing that's interesting to me is I think that Netflix was able to, they had the business model, the streaming model, but they were also able to do something that only HBO was able to do, which is attract top-tier talent by giving creators a place to be, to give creators extreme creative freedom and a lot of money.
Right.
So Amazon, Netflix is out HBO, and HBO says, you know, with House of Cards, they gave David Fincher $100 million to make a TV show. That was unheard of.
Right.
You know, and it paid off.
Yeah.
It was a hit show. And it was here's $100 million, go make a TV show, guys. And
Emmys.
People are like, what? Right. $100 million? Right. Like, and then now they just keep, they do that on the regular. So that was unheard of then. And so as Netflix sort of tightens their grip on creators, you hear about more notes and things like that. Amazon is also free spending and trying to be this way. I foresee a world where Tim Cook and Apple are like, we're even more liberal. Here's $200 million, and you can do whatever you want. We're Apple. So who knows? I don't know. I think it's if you get the creators to come to you, you win. I mean, you see, I just saw with Netflix.
My thing is, like, what is going to be, maybe they haven't created it yet, like we already said, but there needs to be something different that's going to attract me to them.
Yes.
Just because they have a scripted series, so fucking what?
No, it's good.
Because they have a movie, so what? Like, there has to be something that's unique that's going to make me be like, you know, instead of me paying Netflix $8 a month, I'm going to go now to pay Apple.
I think
what is that going to be?
I mean, you may be underestimating the power of the Apple brand. I think that, like, if Apple comes out with a TV, I may buy the Apple TV maybe over the Samsung. You didn't
buy the watch.
they're not winning, and they're not, so far no good with Apple Music and Apple Watch. So maybe I'm making my own argument. I'm making your argument for you. We'll see what happens. I think it's interesting. GE just launched a brand of virtual reality thing, a series about science. It's not the first time GE is actually making a giant investment in the content. They have a really interesting series that they partnered with Imagine Entertainment on. They spent a lot of money. They're stepping up to the plate with these creators on all platforms. This one's virtual reality and other ones, and coming in and like really making an investment in content. And GE is really embracing its sort of PR brand as not just a appliance company, but a technology and science company. And then putting this money into content to support that, I think is really smart. All PR, but it's working.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think they kind of have to. I mean, because that's where the attention is. You know, all of us are now interested. I mean, old and young, we're all interested and dependent on, technology. And the thing about technology is always something new. You want to acquire the newest thing, and that's how it progresses forward. So a company like GE has to do that, to harness the new platforms and mediums of how we communicate to be able to sell their products and to be able to resonate with their consumer. So I love the fact that they're, experimenting and doing stuff with VR in a very interesting, cool way. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And it's all PR because, I mean, he'd say this, but GE... owned NBC for years. They were already in the content business. It's just to put a new face on it. And it's doing it kind of differently. So, not anything new, but I like the way they're going about it. The Shorty Awards were announced. The internet's finest. This is a big Hollywood Reporter thing rollout. Big stars. It's award season. The Shorty Awards are actually getting bigger and bigger. A lot of big names: Leo DiCaprio, Jesse Williams, Aziz Ansari, big movies, a lot of everything else. Which I really care about all the other stuff, but what I care about the most, when I scroll down to Instagrammer of the Year, I saw my lovely sister.
Man, go ahead, bro.
Oh, there she is.
That's
my
right.
My sister's nominated.
That's
for,
awesome.
For Instagrammer of the Year. God bless her, Amina Mucciolo.
Pretty cool, man.
Go to the Shorty Awards, vote for Amina Mucciolo. I don't care about anybody else. That's my bias.
Me neither.
But yeah, so I think that's kind of cool.
I think that's awesome. I think it's awesome that, we obviously, we know Amina. Obviously, your blood. Yeah. We know Amina and, what she's been able to do with her empire in such a short time. And to be able to be nominated as one of the best Instagrammer out of arguably millions of Instagram accounts. Like, I think that's pretty phenomenal.
I think it's fantastic. Yeah. So congratulations, sis. Moving on to the King of Pop, the Michael Jackson impersonator. So Lifetime has a biopic coming up, and people used to laugh at these Lifetime biopics, but they've been cranking them out, man. The Aaliyah one was, kind of popular, and
Michelle.
Sorry, I don't laugh out loud.
Yeah, I mean, how can you not laugh out loud?
The Michelle one.
So yeah, Whitney.
The Whitney one was huge, actually. People love that one.
It was TLC?
Yeah, TLC. So Michael Jackson one's coming. And they have, I think rightfully so, cast a very famous Michael Jackson impersonator to play Michael.
Right.
And I'm happy for this guy. We spent a lifetime, being Michael Jackson, and doing everything you can to look and be like Michael Jackson. And this has got to be the crowning jewel. Is he going to land a role to play Michael Jackson?
Hey,
right?
I guess, man.
Or would you prefer your boy Joseph Fiennes?
Hey, man. Well, what do you think about them canceling the show? How about that? And what do you think about what do you think about them canceling the show? First, let me back that up. What do you think about them casting a white man to play Michael Jackson? And then what do you think about them going through with the cancellation because of the uproar of discontent with that?
Tough, man. I think it's just incredibly tone deaf for them to cast Joseph Fiennes and I'm a fan of him as an actor. I'm sure that he, did a great job, but in the wake of so many, and you can make the arguments about Michael Jackson's complexion and everything else, and how can you find an African American actor to, I hear the arguments. You can't find an African American actor to get to that complexion. You obviously have to go the other way, to get to that complexion as opposed to having a suit. And also, I think they're a lot. there's some talk about the worry of like what happened to Zoe Saldana and the Nina Simone situation. Are we going to lighten up an actor? Are we going to darken up a white? Like, what are we going to do here? So I think that when they just found someone to match his complexion, all makes sense on paper, is ridiculous.
Thank you.
Especially.
I was waiting for it.
Especially when you see the photos.
It's ridiculous. You don't got to show me. I've already seen him.
He does not look like Michael Jackson.
Not at all.
You can put a hat. You can do whatever you want to do. He's not Michael Jackson.
Not at all.
So,
and on top of that, Michael Jackson said while he was living, I think he said it to Oprah, he said, if they ever do a movie about me, please don't cast someone that's white. Don't cast a white man. He said it out of his own mouth.
Yeah.
For them to do that, it was highly insulting and sensitive. I'm glad his daughter spoke up, too.
Yeah.
And, protect his legacy.
She should. I'm not mad at my man. I can't find my man's name, but what's his name? But looks like Susanna passes on this one, too. I mean, she's been involved with the Jacksons since the Jackson 5 days. So I don't know. We'll see. And she worked on the 19... she also worked on a 1992 Jackson miniseries, which I liked.
Was that the Jacksons?
Yeah.
That's the best one. I mean, there's nothing topping that.
Yeah, that was very good with my man, Freddie Boo Boo Washington as Joe Jackson.
Yeah, that's the best one. I could watch that anytime.
That's a good one.
Put that one on. It's, let's go.
That's a good one. the end, the last like 30 minutes of that Michael, I don't know about that dude, but everything else is good.
Right.
Everything else is good. Especially the young Michael.
Oh, yeah. Killed
all
it.
All that stuff killed it.
Killed it.
And the teenage Michael with the afro killed it too.
Yeah.
That's good. I watched that the other day. That's a good miniseries. Last but not least, Nintendo finally is launching a new console. Finally. After 5 years, the Nintendo Switch is about to change the game. Nintendo Switch. How many of those are you picking up?
Hey, man. Unfortunately, I won't be picking up any. However, I really did want the classic one that they offered in November that was sold out because they only had 50 of them that they sold in the whole country.
Yeah, it's still sold out, right?
Right.
But I can't.
That one is pretty cool. I like the nostalgic aspect of this. But this, so the concept is that you get to play. Clearly, you can plug up to your television and play. And then if you want to go outside of your home or whatever, you want to travel with the game, now you can with the second screen. Is that innovative to you?
No.
Okay. I thought I was trying to figure out why, that's a selling point. Yeah. Like, why would I be attracted
and
to
this,
that?
And this thing where you can, I think it's all bad.
Man, Nintendo's fucking up, man.
Like that.
Like, what is that?
Well, it's a controller that you can switch.
It's a controller.
And then you can have it like two controllers in one, or one controller. And it's just the design's awful. I don't know. I mean, we'll see. Are the games going to be that groundbreaking? They must have to be, because this is so far so.
But bad. I mean, I understand theoretically what they're trying to do. Obviously, they were late in the game when mobile gaming started to really, pick up steam, and now mobile gaming is a bit multi-billion-dollar industry, and now they're like last place, And so they're trying to figure out a way to bring their games and make them portable like they did with the NES. But, man, they're just fucking up.
Yep, they're fucking up. On that cheery note, that's all I got. Anything else you got?
Man, that's all I got, man. That's all I got. I was trying to think if there's anything else with technology that's happening, but I can't think of
anything. I do have something. This is kind of a newsy nerd head, but PBS Frontline has an amazing episode going on right now called The Divided States of America. Mm-hmm. And Frontline is, if you're not familiar with Frontline, it's a stalwart, like, amazing investigative series on PBS in the vein of 60 Minutes, except longer form. They do a lot of good bio stuff and investigative stuff. When they get into the investigative stuff, it's incredible. But this is more of a documentary report, Divided States of America. It goes really deep. And part two is last night, part two is tonight. I mean, you can find it on PBS, you can find it on the app, you can find it on, if you find a local PBS station, but I highly recommend it.
Right.
That's all I got.
Yeah, I don't have nothing else, man.
Okay. Well, then that's it. Then we will see you. Next time we see you, we will have a new president.
There will be a new president.
There will be a new president. Okay. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks. Peace. Oh, thank you very much. Everyone can find you, Akili, where?
Oh, they can find me on Instagram and Twitter all day long at Akili Shine, AKILISHINE. And where can they find you?
Instagram and Twitter at Joe K. Braswell, Snapchat JK Braz. Thank you very much, Marissa Serafini, and we'll see you next week.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagram at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Hollywood Redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.